Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the abuse excuse when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell, who is one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood have been strictly ruled out. Now, this process is called science. Well, listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report, and it was made about 1980, and it was a surprising statement. You see, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Now, scientists have been watching for more than 100 years now and keeping track of and making careful measurements, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then that totals 1% per millennium. That's 1% per 1,000 years. So if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth, which is about 93 million miles. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun, billions and billions of years ago. But what did our teachers tell us about the extinction of the dinosaurs? Wasn't that 65 million years ago? Well, if 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs were here on Earth running around, and 20 million years ago, the Earth and the sun were essentially melded together because the sun is shrinking at 5 feet an hour. You know, boys and girls, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do that kind of arithmetic, that kind of math. Now, that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the guise of science. And it's one more of the many lessons that we teach in our Mosaic Law School, which we conduct here twice a year at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the abuse excuse, a book written by Alan Dershowitz. Dershowitz now is a liberal Harvard law professor. And his book makes a lot of sense. I don't agree with his conclusions oftentimes, but it raises some really neat questions, for which he has an answer. And it's those answers that I sometimes take exception with, because if we were to apply the biblical law or the biblical standards, we could solve all of these problems, not 90% or 99%. We'd solve them all. And that's because the guy that wrote the Bible was a pretty smart dude. He wasn't some barefoot Jew running around in the wilderness, you know, eating locusts and wild honey. The guy that wrote the scripture over here was a very, very intelligent creature. I'll use the word creature. You know, we call him God, but this guy's pretty smart. And if you got a guy that's smart enough to invent things like the sun, the moon, the stars, space, the earth, 2 million plants on it, and people and animals, you know, that's a pretty smart dude. You got to give him credit for something. And in the process, he wrote a book called The Scripture, and he said, now listen, this is the way you have to behave toward one another. There's a standard of morality here. He calls it the Ten Commandments, or the law. And if you'll follow this Ten Commandments, you'll get these results. And in Deuteronomy 28, he lists some of the results that you're going to get, 33 articulable benefits. So you'll get rain in due season, and you'll get a lot of wealth, and you'll live a long life, and you'll be happy, and everything will go along fine. Now, if you break these laws, then you're going to have some curses. And he goes on for the rest of the chapter and says, now this is what's going to happen. My daddy used to do that. He'd give me a lesson, you know, and it was called valuable lesson times. And he'd give me this lesson, and he'd tell me the ultimate outcome. He'd say, now, if you make your bed and take out the garbage and wash the dishes and mow the grass, and then you're going to get your allowance, and you're going to get your hunting and your movie money and all the things that you desire and want because you're 10 or 11 or 12 years old. But if you don't do these duties now, I'm going to whip you and take away your allowance, and you can't go to the movies, and I won't take you hunting, and then I'll make you work on Saturday, and I'll make you mow the grass and wash the dishes and do all these things that you hate and loathe. There's this carrot and stick approach. We use that in life today. We have a carrot and stick approach. You know, the government wants you to behave in a certain way, and so they offer you incentives like low interest loans, and we'll help you rebuild your house down in New Orleans. But if you don't, and we won't help you at all, and we'll curse you with the income tax, and we'll do all these bad, wicked, terrible, awful things against you. That's a carrot and stick approach. Well, there's a law here called preventive confinement. You ever heard that term? Preventive confinement. There's only one state in the union that uses it. It's Washington State out on the West Coast. And they use it for sex offenders, called preventive confinement. Let's listen to Alan Dershowitz as he describes this process called preventive confinement in the context of the abuse excuse. He said, what should society be allowed to do with a convicted sex offender who has completed his prison term, but who brags to his cellmates that he intends to continue to commit predatory sex crimes when he is released? Now remember, last time we talked about a young boy, 16 years old. He was just a little under 16 when he killed four people. And all you could do to him under the law in Rhode Island was to confine him until he was 21. He bragged that when I get out, I'm gonna smoke a big marijuana cigarette and go out and do the same thing over again. And so I told you, I said, there's a solution to this that comes from the scripture. Well, now, a sex offender, there's various kinds of sex offenders. There's rapists and there's incestuous sexual relations. And my God, there's probably 50 or more acts, that you could rate or call a sex offense. Various states have different degrees and different punishments and different penalties. And so here's a guy who's locked up. We don't know what he's locked up for, but he's locked up for some kind of a sexual offense. And he says, well, when I get out, I'm going to go do the same thing all over again. Well, several years ago, the state of Washington released a former convict named Earl Schreiner. And after he had served a term for a violent sex act against a child, and after he had boasted that he would commit additional crimes against children, well, true to his word, he then sexually assaulted a 7-year-old boy and cut off his penis. All right, now, we've got a guy named Earl Schreiner. He, years ago, said, here's what I'm going to do. And in fact, when they turned him loose, he went right out and did just exactly what he said he was going to do. So the outrage that followed Schreiner's predicted mayhem resulted in the passage of a new law in Washington. It's a law that is called the Sexual Predator Law. A prosecutor may seek to detain a sexual offender even after he has completed his sentence if they can persuade a jury that the offender has a mental abnormality that causes him to lose control over his sexual impulses. Okay, so let's remember that. Let me repeat it to you so you can tuck this one away. It says, under this so-called sexual predator law, a prosecutor may seek to detain a sexual offender even after he's completed his sentence. Now, let's suppose he's been sentenced to 10 years in prison. He serves every day, the whole 10 years. And now he's about to be released. But if they can persuade a jury that the offender has a mental abnormality or that he loses control over his sexual impulses, you can keep him locked up. Now, since the law's enactment, all 15 people charged with being sexual predators have been found guilty by juries. So this has happened 15 times now. None of them have been released, and none is likely to be released for a long time. Now, consider, for example, the case of Vance Cunningham. Vance Cunningham was convicted of raping two prostitutes who refused to have sex with him because he did not have any money. That's a pretty predictable outcome. You go down to Flo's Whorehouse and you don't have any money, you probably will not have any fun or frolic on Friday night. So Cunningham served 4 years before he was released. He was examined by a prison psychologist who concluded that he was neither dangerous nor mentally ill. Indeed, while in prison, Cunningham had earned his high school equivalency diploma, and upon his release, he got a job as a mechanic on a fishing boat and started dating women, apparently without any incident. Notwithstanding his perfect record for 5 months, the Washington Sex Police picked up the 26-year-old ex-con on the fishing boat and charged him with being a sexual predator. Now, the prosecutor tried to persuade the prison psychologist to change her diagnosis so that Cunningham could be classified as mentally abnormal, but she refused. So, undaunted, the prosecutor simply hired another psychologist and showed him Cunningham's paper record, which included one juvenile conviction and one other adult conviction for sex crimes, and the newly hired psychologist concluded without even interviewing Cunningham that he was mentally abnormal. All right, so now, I don't know if this is important, but this new psychologist concluded without even interviewing Cunningham, never talked to him, that he was mentally abnormal, and a jury concurred by a vote of 11-1, and Cunningham was committed for treatment. All right, I'm going to underline this. Cunningham was committed for treatment. Makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? But there is no treatment available since there is no such recognized psychiatric category of sexual predator. So the psychiatrists don't have any category. It's like having cancer. And we can treat you for cancer because we can identify it and we can look at it through the microscope. So they don't have a category of mental illness called sexual predator that we can treat this guy for. Don't have any drugs, don't have any treatments, don't have any therapies. Indeed, none of the people on the review committee that decides which ex-cons should be recommended for detention is even a mental health professional. And nor is there any valid evidence that even psychologists, like the one who certified Cunningham to be a sexual predator, have any ability to predict which prior offenders will commit new sex crimes. And as one expert who cited studies showing that such predictions are wrong twice as often as they are right put it, he said, you'd do better if you flipped a coin. Now, the Washington law is now being challenged by the ACLU before the state's highest court. The ACLU and other critics of the sexual predator law believe it's nothing more nor less than preventive detention, which is generally repugnant to our basic rights. But recent judicial trends favor preventive detention laws as long as they purport to be non-punitive in nature. Thus, denial of bail to juveniles has been upheld, and detention of the mentally ill has long been permitted. And most recently, the Supreme Court has upheld a law denying bail to adults who are charged with certain crimes and are deemed dangerous. Now, the author of the Washington statute admits that locking up people like Vance Cunningham after he had completed his sentence wouldn't have been fair if we were punishing him. But he denies that Cunningham is being punished. Rather, he is being confined. He's being confined for purposes of public safety and treatment. But the fact that there is no treatment and that the Washington State Psychiatric Association denies that there is a sexual predator mental illness is a factor does not seem to faze the law's author. All right, so let's pause here for a moment. So here's the lawmaker, and he's being asked the question, what do you think of this, since how the Psychiatric Association of Washington State doesn't even have a category? There's no treatment for this guy. It is true, of course, that Cunningham is being confined for purposes of public safety, but so are most violent criminals who are serving their sentences. And if confinement against one's will as a sexual predator is not punishment, then it is difficult to know what the term means. Now, in the Germany of the 30s and 40s, when therapeutic execution of the sick, the handicapped, and the unfit was not called punishment, it was called treatment for purposes of public safety. I would have thought that matters had improved over the past half century, but Washington's sexual predator law is a throwback to a dark period in our history. Now, that was written in December of 1992, and on August 9, 1993, the Washington Supreme Court voted 6-3 in favor of upholding that state's controversial sexual predator statute. All right, how do you like that? Now, let's take a look at this, because the abuse excuse is what Dershowitz is aiming his book and his thesis at. And he says this is an abuse. I don't know if it's an abuse or not. I would measure this as to the alternatives that we have. And the alternative to this is called the Ten Commandment model. I've mentioned this a time or two, so let's start off here with the basics. Around the world today, there are two basic premises of law. The first is the Ten Commandment model. It's been around for thousands of years. It's been rejected universally by everybody for the same 5,000 years or 4,000 years. It has been used a time or two. Here in the United States, we used it from about 1787 to about 1900. And then starting, it was actually earlier in some cases before 1900, we began to deviate from it. And today, thanks to Franklin D. Roosevelt, we have now totally moved away from the Ten Commandments, and we have totally embraced the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, you may argue that, hell, communism wasn't even heard of thousands of years ago, and you're right. You're right. Thousands of years ago, we didn't call it communism. We called it the Babylonian mystery religion, or Catholicism, or Christianity, or we would hang nationalism, or Nazi, or fascism, or socialism. We could invent names that we hung on a practice. Now, let me give you a couple of three illustrations. In the Bible, there is no provision whatsoever for penance, penitentiary, locking people up to punish them, no provision whatsoever. On the other hand, the Babylonian mystery religion, going back to the ancient Babylonians, had dungeons that they put people in and torture, like we use in Guantanamo now. So torture and dungeons and prisons and castles and bastilles and so on has been around for thousands of years, and all of the pagan nations used that. So here in America, we're just following the ancient old pagan rituals that have been going on for a long time. Let's take a look at money and monetary policy. Nations have, for thousands of years, been clipping their coins, cheating their citizenry, creating fiat paper currencies, which is prohibited in the scripture. God says, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And then we go out and create a central bank, the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, and an income tax, which is a counterfeit of tithing, which is the second plank, and a social security program, which is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto and strictly prohibited under the strict liability rule of Exodus 21, 28 through 36. All right, so now that just gives you an illustration of this difference, this divergence that we have here. Now, what we're practicing in America today is a penal system. If you do something bad, we lock you up. That's your punishment, 5 years in prison. And so when we have a sexual predator, we lock him up. We see this guy and we say, okay, you're a sexual predator, so therefore we need to lock you up. That's punishment. Now, when this guy gets through with his punishment, his prescribed punishment, we have a new category of crime here. It's actually not a crime. It's a protection for the public. We'll just continue to lock you up. But for how long? We don't know. We don't know. Now, what would you think if we had a bank robber did that? And the guy is put in jail for bank robbery. And while he's in jail, he says, well, when I get out of jail, I'm going to go back out and rob more banks. And so we say, well, he's a threat to the banking industry. So therefore, we need to give him preventive detention and treat him for his irresistible urge to rob banks. Even though there's no psychiatric name or treatment for this compulsive bank robbery problem that he has. We think of that. We could do that with burglars. We could do that with people that habitually speed. You know, I mean, we could take a guy like you, and you're out here speeding, and you get one speeding ticket, two speeding tickets, three speeding tickets. We sentence you to a year in jail. And while you're in jail, you brag to your buddies in there, well, I'm going to go out and speed again when I get out of jail. And say, oh, gee, we've got to have preventive detention. Speeding kills, and so therefore we're going to lock you up until we can get you over this urge for speeding. See, it's an uncontrollable urge. You know, that's why I say from time to time, I think that here in America, we have taken leave of our senses. We have gone just stark raving mad in this country, unable to think, unable to reason, which is predictable. When you deviate from the Ten Commandment model, then you're kind of on your own. And so that's where society is today. So I thought, well, let's take a look at the law of the scripture here. And let's go back and let's analyze this guy Cunningham and his crime. What did this guy actually do? And then let's visualize, going back to the Ten Commandment model, let's abandon the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto here in our wild lunatic ravings here, and let's pretend like we're going to follow the Ten Commandment model. What did God prescribe for people who commit rape? Even rape against a whore. Well, when we look in the scripture under rape, we find out that it's a capital felony. Let's see if I can find it down here. Rape, here it is. It's in Deuteronomy 22, verses 25 through 27. Rape, punishable by death. Death. Dead, D-E-D. Now, if when this guy Cunningham had been arrested for raping this prostitute, well, she was alleged to be a whore, and she wouldn't have sex with him, and so he raped her. And so they locked him up for 4 years. What would the penalty have been? 4 years in jail? No, he would be dead. And we wouldn't be talking about preventive detention because we're afraid of what this guy might do. Right, let's go back a step further. Let's assume that we did have this whore out here, and we caught her. What should we do? All right. In Deuteronomy 23, verses 17 and 18, it says, there shall be no whore of the daughters of Israel, nor a sodomite of the sons of Israel. And you shall not hire or bring the hire of a whore or the price of a dog into the house of the Eternal your God for any vow. For even both of these are an abomination unto the Eternal your God. So don't pay your tithe, or don't come in here with a holy day offering, you whores, and offer it to God, or you sodomites, because it's an abomination. Oh, but it gets better than that. If we have a whore over here, let's go down the list over here. Let's see if we can find what the penalty is here for adultery. Here it is. It's in Leviticus 20, verse 10, or Deuteronomy 22, verses 22 through 24. Then there's incest. That's another sex crime. And then let's see, going down the list over here, we have whoredom over here, Deuteronomy 22, 13 through 21. And we find that the penalty is death. And so if we had this whore and we had this guy raping a whore, what we would do is take them both out and stone them to death. We would stone the whore for being a whore and stone the rapist for rape. How's that for a plan? Which now eliminates the problem altogether. We don't even have a controversy. We don't have to have any new laws. Ain't that a wild new concept? And this guy Cunningham will never be a threat to anybody. Now let's go back to the first guy. Remember the first story up here? The outrage that followed Schreiner's predicted mayhem resulted in the passage of a new law in Washington that added several states, and a law that several additional states are now considering. This guy Schreiner assaulted a 7-year-old boy and cut off his penis. What would be the penalty for a crime like that under the law of God, under the Mosaic law? What would we do with somebody like that? Well, I don't know what he did to the boy, but if he sodomized the boy or if he practiced some sexual act against the boy, then the penalty that we would ascribe to him would be death, such as with incest or with adultery. But if he just cut off his penis, then we would take the offender and we would cut off his penis, and there's a law here that covers that, which talks about an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, life for life, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. See how simple that is? Now listen, how effective would that be? I don't know. We've never tested it. I haven't seen that. We haven't tried that. We have tried Megan's Law, and we've tried a number of different laws and different approaches to predators, sexual predators, and people that go out and commit the some of the most heinous and atrocious acts that you can think of. We lock them up in jail. But heaven forbid that we should kill them. I mean, we surely wouldn't want to do that now, would we? And so they have laws and rules that if you're released from prison, they have to notify everybody in the neighborhood. Now, let me ask you this. How would you like to have a letter come to you from the government? I don't know what office sends this out. Maybe your local prosecutor. And he says, Bob Jones, the guy that just moved in next door to you, is a sexual predator. And under the sexual predator law, he is now registered with the local sheriff, and he lives next door to you. How would you like that? Maybe you're living three doors away. You want your children out here playing in the cul-de-sac, and one of the neighbors here on the cul-de-sac is a sexual predator. Right? Well, you know, he's been released. Is he a threat to your children? I don't know. Under the Mosaic Law, he would never be a threat to your children because he'd already be dead. Here's another factor. I brought this up last time. Remember, it costs about $50,000 a year now to incarcerate some guy. So this guy Cunningham spent 4 years in prison, remember? All right, so 4 years. That was $200,000. Now, we're going to lock this guy up because he's a sexual predator. He's a threat to your kids. And so instead of warning you that this guy is living next door, and we don't know what this guy's going to do, remember, we'd stand as good a chance flipping a coin trying to figure out what this guy's going to do in the future. And so we're going to lock him up. So let's lock him up for 10 years, okay? 10 years times $50,000. That costs you $500,000 to lock this guy up. Do you really want to spend, do you really want to sentence yourself to a $500,000 fine to lock this guy up for 10 years to protect your kid from this sexual predator? Can you explain to me how that makes sense? Well, I guess, well, because, you see, we cannot face our responsibility. Our responsibility under the law of God is to put this guy to death. But we can't do that because that's not, you know, that's just not civil. It's just not nice to kill people. Excuse me. It's okay for these sexual predators to come out here and take your kid and cut off his penis. But it's not okay to kill this guy. So what we have to do is lock him up in jail because we can't kill him, and then we have to spend $50,000 a year and support him in jail and pay guards, you know, to guard him night and day, 24/7. Now, I think that the God of the Bible came up with a simpler, easier, straightforward, easy-to-understand solution to these crime problems. Now, I'm sure that Mr. Dershowitz would disagree with me because he's opposed to capital punishment. And I'm not going to, you know, sit here and castigate Dershowitz for his view. He's entitled to his view. He thinks capital punishment is not civil. It's not civilized. My conclusion then would be he does not believe that the God of the Bible is civil or civilized. He must believe then that the God of creation is a barbarian for even suggesting that. As a punishment, if you cut off a child's penis, we will, in retribution, cut off your penis. You know, if that was a well-known practice in your society, in your jurisprudence, that we are going to do to you what you did to him. For instance, down in Texas, there was a sodomite, for all you sodomites out there. And the sodomite alleged, now, we don't know that he was. He never had a trial. He never had an opportunity to defend himself in court. We don't know whether he was or not, but he was alleged by the two perpetrators to be a sodomite. And so they decided that I suppose they were good Christians, and that they were going to kill him. And so they tied him onto the back of a pickup, and they drug him to death. I mean, they killed this guy. Now, that's number one, it's murder. They did it with premeditated forethought. Drug this guy to death. Now, I'm going to leave out the consideration that this guy was a sodomite because it's irrelevant and immaterial. The fact that they killed this guy. How did they kill him? They drug him to death behind a pickup. So what's the penalty for murder? Let me give it to you here. We'll take a look here at murder. Now, there's 24 capital crimes here in the Bible. 24 capital crimes. Murder, right at the top of the list. Prohibited in Exodus 21:12, 21:14, and Leviticus 24:17 through 21. Murder. The punishment, the penalty for murder is death. It's a capital felony. And here in America, we still practice that. We kill people. You know, we put them to death if we catch them killing people. But as Dershowitz pointed out, and I reported on to you last time, but the average homicide in America only gets 4 to 8 years in prison. Yeah, we're still killing a few, but we don't kill them all. And he says that's unfair. And I said I agree with Mr. Dershowitz, that's unfair. Every black man who kills a white should be put to death. All right? And every white who kills a black should be put to death. Murder is a colorless crime. It's irrelevant as to what this guy's race or nationality or religion or sexual orientation is. You don't have any power to go out and kill people because you think they're bad. wicked, terrible, awful, or evil. That has to be done by the proper authorities, and that's spelled out in the scripture also. And I'm not opposed to the proper authorities, but the proper authorities aren't carrying out the law of God. They're carrying out the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We've made our own laws. We've decided that God is some kind of adult over here who's uncivilized and a barbarian, and therefore we're going to fix his mistakes. And in the process, we're floundering around out here, unable to administer justice. We can't administer justice to the guy that we've got locked up indeterminately after he has served his sentence that we prescribed for him. We said, now, we're not going to put you to death. We're going to sentence you to 4 years in prison. But then after you serve your 4 years in prison, then we've got a new plan over here called preventive detention. But this isn't punishment. Excuse me. If you lock people up because they raped somebody, isn't that punishment? If you keep them locked up, what do you call that? And then while you're mulling that over, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law, our website is updated weekly. It has a radio log, our schedule, and archives, and all of which can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. All of these law hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book by Alan Dershowitz. It's called The Abuse Excuse. Alan Dershowitz, published back in 1990, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, long in there. It's an oldie, but it's a goodie, and it's well worth your $22.95. Now, that was the price back in 1995. It might be $30 or something like that, but I rated it a 1 in 100 book. I've never seen a book like it. We don't have books that pick up current affairs like this and say, hey, let's logically analyze responsibility and abuses and excuses, and then let's see if we can't come to a conclusion here. Now, in many cases, I think Dershowitz hits the nail right on the head. I mean, the guy, he's no dummy. He's got a good mind. I think some of his conclusions, as I said before, I disagree with, but then, you know, that's part and parcel with free exercise of speech, isn't it? That we have an opportunity to express our views. Now, his view is that capital punishment is bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil. And I said, the way it's being used in the United States of America, and I would suspect in most countries around the world, I would agree with him. He says it's ineffective. He's right. I don't disagree with that. But capital punishment comes from our Creator, and our Creator gave us a list of capital crimes. So I thought I'd take you through that, and we'll just kind of run through capital crimes over here. And now remember, if you're opposed to capital death, or the death penalty, capital punishment, well, then what you're saying is that God, then, is a barbarian. Because capital punishment didn't just come up in the Clinton administration or from Franklin D. Roosevelt. You know, it didn't originate with Henry VIII. It's been around for thousands of years. It came up way back in the Garden of Eden. I mean, coming right out of the chute. God told Adam and Eve plainly, you eat off that tree, and there's a death penalty that is ascribed to that act. And by God, they ate off the tree, and both of them died. Now, he didn't take them out and stone them to death. They died, I suspect, of old age. Adam, it says, died when he was 930 years old. Doesn't tell us when Eve died, but I imagine when she was 935, 40, 50, or something like that, she died. She's not around anymore. Now, God over here says this death over here is a bad thing, but he says there's certain acts over here that are bad, like running around killing other people is a bad act. So he gave us a law. It's one of the Ten Commandments. He said, you shall do no murder. And then he said, if somebody goes out and violates that law and they commit murder, then our responsibility is to put him to death, to shed his blood. And it even spells it out. He's to be stoned to death. Now, in America today, this is one of the reasons I take exception with this death penalty, and I agree with Dershowitz. God requires that you shed his blood, and here in America, we never shed blood. We electrocute people, no blood. We gas them, no blood. We hang them, no blood. Well, unless his head pops off, you know, sometimes that happens. In which case, it's still not the prescribed modality for killing them. Stoning is the prescribed modality. And then the fourth one now is called lethal injection. God, on the other hand, comes along and he says, now listen, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Why did he come to that conclusion? He says, so that you'll hear and fear. I think that that works. Now let me tell you a little story over here. I had a student in here one time from Aramco. He was over in Saudi Arabia. He saw two crimes over there punished. One of them, a guy stole something. I don't know what he stole, but he was a thief. And they took him out, and it was a big public celebration. I mean, this isn't done in private. It isn't done in the inner sanctum of an operating room in a hospital or in a prison dungeon someplace that nobody gets to see. There's actually a big to-do. He said they were selling cotton candy and souvenirs and T-shirts, and so it's like going to a carnival. They didn't have rides there, but, you know, it's kind of like having a carnival. And they're going to cut this guy's hand off is what they're going to do. And so they bring the guy up, and they tie him up. And then they tie his hand to a big block of wood, which they don't have a whole lot of over in Saudi Arabia, so I imagine they imported a block of wood from someplace else, a great big block of wood. And then a guy comes out with this Arabian scimitar. Now, these Arabs have a special sword. It's shaped like no other sword in the world. They call that a scimitar. And it's as sharp as a scalpel. And they bring it out with an executioner, and this executioner goes kerwhapo and cuts this guy's hand off. And he said that guy screamed and yelled and cried, and so then they untied him, and they had an ambulance there. So they put a tourniquet on him and put him in the ambulance and hauled him off to the hospital and did whatever they had to do to sew up his stump, and the guy lived again. Now, what's the purpose for cutting this guy's hand off? And why publicly? Why in front of literally hundreds and maybe even thousands of people who are present? It's a public execution of a sentence so that everybody can see this is what we do to people who steal. And this Aramco oil worker, he said he almost lost it. He almost puked. He said it was the most god-awful bloody thing that he'd ever seen in his life. So I asked him this question. I said, well, did it send a message to you that you don't want to steal, at least in Saudi Arabia? And he says, oh, God, yeah. And he told me, he said, you know, over there it's common when you go into a bazaar for the owner of a shop to walk out of the shop and leave you in there by yourself. And he said they don't need locks and doors and bars and so on because nobody steals in Saudi Arabia. Well, you know, once in a while somebody will steal, and if they catch them now, they cut their hand off. Now, God never prescribed cutting your hand off as a punishment for theft. That's not an Israelite custom. I just bring that to your attention because they do that in Saudi Arabia, and they do it for the purposes of teaching people, don't steal. Here's what we're going to do to you. God has another punishment. Yeah, it's called restitution. And the third time you do that, we take you out and stone you to death. I mean, if you can't stop stealing, if you have this uncontrollable impulse, the third time you do it, this is where we get the term, he's a three-time loser. In the Bible, when you become a three-time loser, we just take you out and stone you to death. Well, you know, you got to learn at some point in time. Now, I learned about murder and theft when I was about 5 years old. I wasn't in first grade yet. Now, do you remember when you went to school, there were some kids there that stole from other kids? Well, let me report to you that I never heard of a theft in school until the fifth grade. I was in fifth grade before I heard about a theft in school. And that's because it was common. Everybody taught the Ten Commandments to their children when I was a kid. It was the model. We all used it and all practiced it. And my dad taught me that, and my grandma and granddad. And, you know, there was a standard there. Now, the second story I want to tell you, same Aramco oil worker, capital crime. There was a Saudi princess. This is 1976. I looked it up in the National Geographic. I don't remember what month of the National Geographic, but I remember the year, 76. And there was a Saudi Arabian princess, and she was having an affair, also known as adultery or fornication, with an American, which is why the Muslim people hate us. And that's because we've got morals like alley cats. If it moves, breed it. That's the philosophy of American males. If it moves, breed it. Well, anyway, this guy's having an affair with this Saudi princess. Now, they didn't catch this guy, or if they caught him, they didn't punish him. But they took the Saudi princess out, buried her in the sand up to her neck, and then stoned her to death. And he said that's where he did lose it. He said that was the bloodiest, most god-awful thing he'd ever seen in his life. Well, I don't doubt but what it was bloody, but it was nasty. But I asked him the same question. I said, did it leave a lasting impression? He said, God, I'll never forget it. Never. And I said, now, are you going to go out and commit adultery or fornication in Arabia? I said, never, never. I said, okay, then the Saudis over there then have achieved their goal. They wanted to instill in you the fear. And they didn't spare even a princess. Maybe it was even worse if it had been a commoner. Maybe they might have given her a little slack, but I don't know that that's true. They didn't give any slack to her because she was one of the elites, and they took her out and stoned her to death because she violated the law. Now, in Israelite practice, under the Mosaic law, under the law of God, that's exactly what we would do. We would stone that person to death. Now, there's no prescription in the Bible about burying them up to their neck in sand first. That isn't a prescription. And I would presume that we take them out and tie them up to a telephone post and stone them right there, but that's the moral of the story. Now, it eliminates, or virtually eliminates, that crime. Maybe every 10 years or so, there will be somebody that forgets or can't remember or couldn't remember, and so they've got to take them out and stone them to death, but it's a rare event. All right, now, let me take you through a list of crimes here, because if here in America, or Australia, or New Zealand, I don't care where you live, Cuba, I don't care, if you would practice this in your society, you could virtually eliminate all of these capital felonies, all of these crimes. Now listen to this, murder, smiting of parents, that is, children or young adults slapping their mothers or fathers or striking them, kidnapping, like the Lindbergh baby, cursing of parents, that is, talking back to your parents, abortion. All of you right, you know, you women out there that want to practice a woman's right to choose, yeah, abortion, two statutes here, punishable by death. See, we could eliminate this whole abortion problem in America, and I don't think it'd take very long to do that. We're not going to, because it's a very profitable business, it's a very profitable undertaking, and it's the money, you know, follow the money. Number six, negligent property liability resulting in death. So, if you dig a hole and somebody falls in it, if you've got a bull or an animal and it goes out and it kills somebody, there was a case in San Francisco, California, a dog, or a pair of dogs, I forgot, two of these Rottweiler dogs, something like that, attacked a child and killed the child. And they got real excited about that, and they put it in the press and one thing and another. Now, I'm not opposed to people having Jersey bulls. I've got two. But I've got to be very careful. See, Jersey bulls have a bad reputation, and I have to be very, very careful, very, very diligent. Watch those animals all the time. Because if one of them goes out and harms you, I got to pay you for the damage it causes you. If it killed you, you could take me out and stone me as a result of it. There's a process for doing that. And so I think these were Rottweiler dogs. There's some, you know, one of them breed of dogs, you know, that's kind of notorious. Killed this kid, child. And so they didn't kill the people that owned the dog. It was a man and woman that owned the dog. But under this law, we would take those people out and stone them to death. I think that would have a deleterious effect on ownership of dangerous dogs. It would probably decimate the Rottweiler population. There's another breed of dog. I forgot what it is now, a mean dog, not a Doberman Pinscher now, but some other kind of dog kills people. Now, if you want to keep those kind of dogs, that's fine, you know, but you got to be responsible. And I think that's Dershowitz's point in writing his book. He says, you know, we've got all these excuses. Well, I didn't know my dog was going to kill somebody. Hell, I've got Jersey livestock. I know that Jersey bulls are dangerous. I'm not ignorant. I know that. And I act accordingly. I try to be just as responsible as I can be. And I understand full well that the potential of one of my animals harming somebody is always there. And so, you know, I got to tell people when they come in here, and don't go out there, you know, messing around by yourself. I had one Jersey bull here. My livestock are pretty gentle, but, you know, I had one here one time. He started to get up. He got uppity with me is what happened. And so that bull, while he was uppity with me, I took him out and gave him a number 9 overcoat with cellophane wrapping. That's what we do to animals like that. And then there's witchcraft. Well, for all you witches out there, death. Bestiality, when I have sex with a dog or a cow or something, that's death. Idolatry, death. Profaning the Sabbath, that's Sabbath breaking, death. Adultery, death. Incest, death. Remember this guy, what was his name, Woody Allen? He was married to a woman having sex with her daughter, incest. If you want to take a look at sex crimes, go to Leviticus chapter 18. Leviticus, third book of the Bible, chapter 18, has all of the sex crimes listed right there. Sodomy, death. And then marriage of a man to both a mother and her daughter, death. Blasphemy, that's treason against God, death. False prophecy, oh my God. This would kill half the Christian preachers in our society. You know, the guys that are running around out here predicting the future, false prophecy, death. Reviling priests and judges, that's called contempt of court, death penalty for contempt. Perjury, where a false witness comes in a capital crime. Perjury isn't always punishable by death, but if the guy that you're lying about is facing capital punishment and you lie about him, then your perjury is punishable by death. Incorrigible delinquency, like the one we talked about yesterday, death. whoredom. All you whores out there, prostitutes, you know, working girls, just trying to make a living, death. There's a bright spot, though, for all you prostitutes. All the Johns die with you. A little consolation prize there. Not only are we going to kill the whores, we're also going to kill the facilitators of the whoredom. God, that would just devastate politics, wouldn't it? Can you imagine the Democratic or the Republican convention? Like, you'd lose half the delegates at the convention. Rape, death, usury. All you bankers out there, all of you loan sharks, death. That eliminates usury and interest. And then oppressing widows and orphans. That's a sleeper, number 24. Oppressing widows. You always want to ask a woman, are you a widow? You know, before you do a business deal with her, just so that you don't get crosswise of that law. All right, now those are the 24 laws, 24 crimes, I should say, that warrant the death penalty. Here in America, I think there's about two, kidnapping and murder, you know, that you could probably get killed for. Now, treason against the United States is you know, spying, something like that. Sometimes you could get killed, but I'll give you the list here for punishment. You can be burned, stoned, hanged, scourged, excommunicated, your hand cut off. You could die childless, the same as you did to him. Forced marriage, national captivity, loss of blessings, fines, restitution, sore sickness, disease, plague, swelled belly, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, life for life, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe, freedom of your slaves, city of refuge, the lake of fire, and what I thought to do unto them will I do unto you. 29 categories of crimes with 29 different punishments. Now you tell me that God doesn't have a sense of humor, or that he doesn't have a sense of justice. Huh? I'm about out of time here, boys and girls. We're going to have to leave it right there. Remember, the book is Alan Dershowitz's The Abuse Excuse and Other Cop-Outs, Sob Stories, and Evasions of Responsibility. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.